Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special Super Bowl debrief edition of the TBH Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler Henry. We have officially done 20 of these now, and I hope you're ready for a good one, because following the big game on Sunday, we have a lot to talk about. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are your new NFL champions via a 31-9 rout of the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday, and here to help me break it all down are two returning friends of the show. My first guest is a Sports Illustrated writer for the Arizona Cardinals and a writer for the ASU Sun Devils. Please welcome back to the show, Alex Weiner. Alex, this is now, what, 6-7 weeks in a row that we've had you on?
I know, I'm going to have to start asking you to pay me. At this point,
I don't know about that. Tell you what, Alex, I will pay you 50% of my salary for the podcast and we'll call it good.
All right, sounds good.
My next guest is a Sports Illustrated writer for the Kansas City Chiefs, the host of the Roughing the Kicker podcast, and currently the producer of SI's 100 and 100 series, breaking down 100 of the best college athletes in the country and soon to enter the NFL draft. Please welcome back to the show after a 1 week hiatus, Jordan Foote. Jordan, it's good to have you back as always.
Yeah, Tyler, thanks for having me on, man.
All right. So, you know, a lot to talk about, a big game. Tom Brady gets another ring, the Buccaneers victorious. I think a lot of us, myself included, in shock at what we saw. There's a lot to talk about. And I think when you talk about a game as big as the Super Bowl, with as many people that watch the Super Bowl, again, the most televised event every single year on a world stage, there are a lot of narratives that come out of a game like this. So we, before the show, we sat down, we took a look at some of the biggest narratives, and we have them ranked in what we believe is the least or no important to the most important. So we're going to start on the bottom end with two narratives that I just want to quickly dispel. I just want to get it out of the way and not really bring it up again. But there is, you know, again, anytime you have rabid fan bases or people that don't watch a lot of regular season football, there are some things that come out of this. And one of the things that I keep hearing and seeing on social media, and it's inevitable anytime Tom Brady does anything, is that the refs handed this game to Tampa Bay, that the refs completely were out to get Kansas City and they screwed over the Chiefs. And that's the only reason that the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl this year. It's absolutely insane. If you take away every scoring drive in the game that had a penalty in it, the Bucs still win big. Penalties were almost always followed by blown coverages or big drops on Kansas City's part. Jordan, I want to come to you really quickly on this first. And again, I think we're all on the same page here, but there's absolutely no weight that can be held by the statement that the Chiefs lost this game exclusively because of bad officiating, right?
It's honestly annoying that people even bring it up. And like, I get that it is possible for there to be bad officiating, but if you don't want the game to be impacted by bad officiating, then don't put yourself in that position. Like, play better throughout the game. Like, it's like those teams that lose on a bad call, and they say that's the reason you lost. Well, if you would have played better throughout the game, then you wouldn't have lost on that. I mean, it's the Chiefs could have, even with good officiating or fantastic officiating, the Chiefs still would have lost because they played like a pile of you-know-what. I mean, it just that's how it goes, and I think that I believe it was Chris Jones who went to the media after the game, and we were sitting in the Zoom, and he like was obviously irritated about it and said that it impacted the game and blah, blah, blah. I get it. You're frustrated, but personally, just someone watching it, sure, the officiating wasn't great, but it did not impact the game.
Sure. I tend to be of the belief that, and again, I feel like you guys would agree, but if you watch a lot of regular season football, we really didn't see anything that was officiated any more or less consistently than what we've seen throughout the course of the year. Now, I personally would love to see the NFL bring back the concept of an uncatchable ball. I think if the ball is 20 yards over the receiver's head, it doesn't matter what you do to that receiver, probably not warranting of a pass interference penalty. But again, it's just silly. Alex, I'll give you a brief moment if you want to touch on this. But again, to say that this game was won or lost by officiating predominantly, I think it's just silly.
Yeah, Jordan's completely right. Were there a couple calls that, you know, you could dispute? As you mentioned, the uncatchable balls, and sure, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's sort of like, I guess I'll tie it to the Cardinals season a little bit, since I haven't mentioned them in a few weeks, how the Cardinals, they lost because they had some bad luck in week 17 because Kyler Murray got hurt. No, they lost because they put themselves in a position where everything had to go right because they did take care of business earlier. And the Chiefs are the same way. I mean, some calls went against them, but at the end of the day, you can't put yourself in that position. And even with the calls, it didn't matter at all. They got clobbered in this game, and we'll go into that.
Sure. One more thing really quickly. Alex, if you want to mention something about this, just chime in here after Jordan talks. But I feel like this is another one we can just dispel quickly and completely move on. So I've also heard a lot of talk that this game rests squarely on the shoulders of Andy Reid, which is also ridiculous. Look, if you go back and rewatch the game, Kansas City pulled a lot of the tricks they have in their bag out. They tried a lot of different things that have worked for them this year. And yes, maybe Andy Reid could have made a couple of adjustments. But when you're getting outplayed at almost every position, there's really not a lot that you as a head coach or an offensive or defensive coordinator can really do. Jordan, really quickly, just your thoughts on the coaching in this game for KC, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, Andy did pretty much everything he could. I mean, he could have tried to ironically establish the run a little bit more. He kind of abandoned that in the first half when the game was still at hand. I think he could have went to the run when Tampa can get pressure with four and drop seven. I think running the ball is honestly probably the better thing to do, or at least like establish a quick short passing game. Mahomes obviously had no time to really do anything throughout that game, so get a couple RPOs involved. I mean, the game plan against the Bills in both the regular season and the playoffs was fantastic. It was a vanilla game plan. They RPO'd them to death because the Bills wanted to drop back into coverage, and I think that the game plan for Tampa was somewhat similar to what they did in the regular season, and Tampa's defense did a fantastic job. Todd Bowles called a phenomenal game, but when your offensive line is down to basically your third string across the board, your wide receivers are ineffective, your tight end, who is one of the best of all time, isn't having a good game, I mean, there's only so much you can do as a head coach, like you said.
Sure. You know, moving on to, let's start getting into some things, some narratives that come out of this game that do have some kind of forebearing on what happened. And let's start with quarterback play on both sides. Starting with Kansas City, one other thing, and again, this is a very small splinter of people. This is not even enough people, even in the craziest parts of Twitter, that I'm really annoyed. But I have heard some people that are trying to blame Patrick Mahomes, which I think is the silliest thing on the planet. Mahomes gave this game everything he had. He never quit. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Heading into the fourth quarter, this game was probably over. Late in the fourth quarter, this game was certainly over. And yet Mahomes was still doing everything that he could to try to give Kansas City a chance in this game. The kid played his heart out. He has absolutely no quit. And again, I think everything that I have seen out of him since he entered the league has just impressed me more and more. Alex, really quickly, in terms of Mahomes' performance in this game, I did want to ask you, you know, what did you see anything out of Patrick Mahomes that even worried you a little bit? Or again, do you think this is just a direct result of the teammates around him and just kind of the way they got manhandled on offense?
The poor guy with turf toe had to run nearly 500 yards around in the backfield just to escape. This says a lot of things about the Chiefs, but it doesn't say a ton of things to me about Mahomes. I mean, you saw him just like it's seemingly like 2 inches off of the ground, like chucking a ball 30 yards down the field. I mean, even in certain plays, and I know some Buccaneers players were mic'd up on the sideline, like, wow. Even in completions, people were like, wow, I can't believe he even got rid of that ball. Like, it's a miracle that he was only sacked 3 times. And it's a testament to him and his, you know, ability to evade and also put together some pretty good throws under pressure. And there was several drops and miscues and nobody could get open. And it was a disaster all around him. But I don't think that this game says a ton about Mahomes. I know in the future, and I know we're going to talk about like the GOAT talk eventually, it's going to be like, oh, Mahomes couldn't beat Brady earlier on, even when Brady was 43 years old. Well, they were playing basically two different games, with Mahomes basically playing chicken and Brady just like being able to sit back with no pressure and do whatever he wanted. So yeah, this doesn't say a ton to me about Mahomes. If anything, it's like, wow, I can't believe he did as much as he did. But it's a tough one. It's a really tough kind of box score to have on your resume. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that everything had to crumble around him.
Sure. Jordan, we're going to talk plenty about the penalties, the drops, the miscues, the pressure on Patrick Mahomes. Again, the time that Tom Brady had in the pocket. I do want to ask you one thing really quickly here. I am actually of the belief that if there aren't as many drops in this game, a couple of those throws, like Alex mentioned the one where he's rolling to his right, he's falling down, he sidearms a ball 40 yards downfield, and it just donks off of his receiver's helmet. Again, I feel like this game could have actually been close if he had gotten a little bit more help from his receivers. But again, he never gave up.
Yeah, absolutely. On that first drive, I guess it was the second one, I can't remember which, McCole Hardman had a deep flag that he completely misran and then stopped in the middle of his route, so that was a mistake. He had a dropped pass. Hill had a drop in the end zone, which was one of those Mahomes plays where he just got out of the pocket that didn't really exist and somehow got the ball off, fading to his left, hit Hill in the helmet on his face mask, couldn't come down with it. That play where he was parallel to the ground, hit Darrell Williams 30 yards down the field right in the face mask. He couldn't come down with it. There was another play where he got away, probably the one where he ran the most, and reversed field twice, spun around, fading out of bounds. Somehow got it to the corner of the end zone where Byron Pringle was at. He couldn't come down with it. Like, Kelce had a couple really bad drops. It was like, if you would have had a list of things that would have to go wrong for the Chiefs to lose like this, every single thing did go wrong. And shout out to the Bucks for playing a great game, because obviously their offensive game plan pretty much shredded the Chiefs when they needed to, and defensively Todd Bowles was fantastic. But the fact that people say that the Chiefs would have won if Tom Brady was their quarterback in that game, and I think contrarily, like, I don't even know if they score a point if Tom Brady's their quarterback in that game.
Yeah, I completely agree. If and we've seen Tom under pressure this year. That statement is just absurd. But yeah, there's a lot to break down, a lot to get into here. But really quickly, I did want to talk for a moment while we're talking about quarterback play. A lot of people are also a little bit frustrated that, you know, Brady, oh, well, he didn't have 400 yards in this game. Look, he did what he's always done. He did what he needed to do to win the game. He's 21 of 29, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions in this game. Alex, I want to talk more broadly about just kind of the Tampa offense. Again, 31-9, the final score in this one. And it seemed like they had everything that they wanted in this game. Leonard Fournette had a couple of big runs. You saw Tom Brady able to carve people up. Rob Gronkowski, 6 catches for 67 yards and 2 touchdowns. It seemed like whenever the Bucs needed a big play post-first quarter, they were able to find it. What were some of the biggest keys that you saw in terms of the way that they were kind of able to carve up this Chiefs defense?
Byron Leftwich called a really balanced attack, and the play action was working perfectly, and they just stuck to it. They ran a lot of it. I think it was 43% of his dropbacks were play action, and it worked to perfection because Brady was able to, you know, get back and get rid of the ball fairly quickly. You mentioned Gronkowski having a big game. He used his tight ends a lot, which was something that I figured he would, given that the Chiefs, their linebackers really struggled to cover tight ends. And you mentioned Leonard Fournette, playoff Lenny, had a big resurgence this season, but they've also, you know, they ran the ball well against a team that wasn't great at defending the run. So they took sort of, you know, the weaknesses of the Chiefs defense and really hammered them home, and it works to perfection. And you mentioned him, Brady wasn't a world beater with 400 yards. I thought he was perfect in this game. He did exactly what they needed to continue to march the ball downfield, keep possession. They won the possession battle, which I thought was going to be massive for them in this game. And they got it done in the red zone, which is another one of those Chiefs defense weaknesses. So they did basically everything right to pick apart this defense. And, you know, of course, obviously their own defense played magnificent to the point where it gave their offense a lot of great opportunities. But I thought the offense was sort of the perfect game plan. And all the credit in the world goes to Brady, but also to Byron Leftwich especially.
So you guys each briefly touched on this to a degree. Let's move to what we consider to be the third biggest narrative to come out of this game. Jordan, I know you mentioned Todd Bowles. Alex, I know you mentioned Byron Leftwich. Of course, Bruce Arians brings it all together. Those three need to be commended for executing a nearly flawless game plan. Again, one of the most interesting stats that I saw coming out of this game, this is the first time in Patrick Mahomes' playing career that he has been held to under 10 points. The lowest single point totals he had been held to in the NFL were 17, 13, and 26 in his three seasons here, 10, 26, and 13 in his three seasons at Texas Tech, and 38 and 29 in his two seasons as the starter at White House High School. Look, the coordination was flawless in this game. The game plan was flawless in this game. The Bucs simply had the perfect thing ready to go to stop Kansas City. And Jordan, really quickly, I know we've touched on a little bit of it, but in terms of the game plan, in terms of what Tampa walked in, tried to accomplish, and then executed flawlessly, what were some of the biggest things that you saw where by quarter number two, quarter number three, you know, it was so apparent that the Bucs had game planned this so perfectly?
Alex really hit the nail on the head offensively, so I'm not going to really add too much to that. I think that Leftwich and Arians really had a game plan that targeted guys like Dan Sorensen and Ben Neiman, the two weakest links on the Chiefs defense, and really did well. The offensive line was fantastic. Defensively for them, they ran a lot of stunts along the defensive line, which the Chiefs had a right tackle playing, or no, a right guard playing left tackle, a right guard playing right tackle, a center playing left guard. I mean, it was just a complete and utter mess, but it was, the stunts were effective. They caught guys off balance. The Chiefs offensive line just wasn't good. They played a lot of cover two and cover four. They had some weird three high safety looks where they were like 15-20 yards deep, which is something you really, personally, I had never seen in a game before. I mean, Todd Bowles just sat back and put on an absolute masterclass. He was nothing short of fantastic, and I think that that defensive game plan the Chiefs weren't prepared for, and part of that's on Andy Reid for not, you know, making adjustments and stuff like that, but really, when you're seeing stuff you've never seen before, I don't think that that's the blueprint to beat the Chiefs, because if they have their starting offensive line, that game probably goes quite a bit differently, but it was something they hadn't seen, and they definitely weren't prepared for it.
Sure. I think that's more than fair. Alex, we've talked about this quite a bit. You mentioned, you know, kind of on the offensive side. Jordan mentioned on the defensive side. Anything to add really quickly here before we move into some of the Chiefs' miscues here?
This Tampa Bay front line is stacked. Yes. I mean, it is ridiculous how much talent it has. And, you know, you mentioned just with a mess of an offensive line, they had the perfect personnel to just dominate it, and to the point where they could drop seven back in coverage and really take away all the deep threats. I mean, it was the perfect storm, and I'm upset that I didn't really see it coming. I thought, oh, you know, Mahomes, you know, they'll hold up just enough where Mahomes will make some magic happen, and it just didn't happen, and it couldn't happen because every other play, and actually more than every other play, he had three guys in his face. And Vita Vea being back was massive. I know he missed the game last time that the Chiefs and Buccaneers played against each other. And then on the edges, I mean, JPP still got it. I mean, he was great. Shaq Barrett was probably one of the standouts, and Levante David, when they had him trudging through the middle, he was spectacular too. So I can't believe just the amount of talent they've been able to gather just for that defensive front. I mean, it's really excellent team building. And, you know, we mentioned this, and maybe the secondary may be being a little bit of one of their weaknesses, but in the end, it didn't matter. Carlton Davis was excellent, and their safeties did enough to clog up the holes. So really excellent team building, and just, you know, it was sort of a display of just what sort of a really perfect pass rush that looks like in a setting like this.
Yeah, I think the defense as a whole, and that unit specifically, I think just continued to get better throughout the course of the year. I know early on there were a lot of questions about team chemistry on both sides, but, you know, by game two, three of the playoffs, especially in that game against Green Bay, I think we really saw what this unit was capable of. Jordan, really quickly, one more name that I have not heard on this podcast yet, and I really haven't heard as much as I would expect to after a game like this. I know it's kind of a moot point, but do you feel like this game, at least the way that it was played out from the Kansas City's perspective, how different do you think it would have been had Eric Fisher been healthy and good to go and everyone playing kind of in their usual spots in this game?
I think that it would have made things better. Mahomes wouldn't have been running for his life on essentially 50% of the plays, which it seemed like it was even more than that. But when Mecole Hardman is not running the right route, when Tyreek Hill isn't effective, when you drop two touchdowns, when you can't convert on a third, when Travis Kelce isn't effective, you're not running the ball. I mean, I think that it does change the game, and I think Kansas City has a much better chance to win if they have their starting offensive line, because then maybe you don't have to make some of those crazy catches at the end of plays. But, man, the Chiefs literally just completely wet the bed. I mean, on all three sides of the game, the coaching staff didn't do well enough. Mahomes didn't have a good game. People have said that he outplayed Brady, which you look at the numbers and it doesn't make much sense, but then you watch what he did considering, and it's a valid argument, but he's the first one to say he could have played better and made stuff happen. So overall, the offensive line would have been nice to have for them, but I think given all the other miscues they made that it wouldn't have been quite enough.
Sure, and let's talk about those miscues now. So the two biggest things that come out of this, it's on defense, it's the penalties. Obviously, 11 penalties, over 100 yards given up, a couple of really big spots for Kansas City. And again, some of those can be contested, some of them can't. But they did not play well defensively. On offense, the biggest issue is the drops. You, Jordan, I think you listed out about 7 or 8 big drops in this game. A couple by Kelsey, one by Hill, one by Pringle, one by Hardman. It seemed like everybody, I mean, Mahomes was doing everything that he could, but he just was not getting the help. In terms of the drops specifically, I want to come to you on this because, again, you've watched this team all season long. You've seen this offense, this well-oiled machine that has just taken down team after team. My question to you, how does this even happen? Like, I understand that as the game goes on, as things start to get stacked up against you, it's easy for things to get inside your head. But this is a team that was down to San Francisco last year in the Super Bowl, and they found a way to come back. This team has been down big in playoff games before, and they've always been able to find their footing. So is there anything that you saw? Is there anything that you felt throughout the course of this game that makes this make any more sense to you? Or is this just one of those that you kind of have to take as it is and move on from it as a team?
I think you just have to take it as it is for the most part. I mean, it's those drops aren't there. They might never have another game like that as a group where they have that many miscues, and hopefully they don't. I mean, it was, I think Reed's quote after the game was, it was a bad day to have a bad day. And literally it was, you can have those games in the regular season and it's a burn the tape game, but that is literally everything that people have talked about in terms of how to beat the Chiefs. Is hope they shoot themselves in the foot. And the Chiefs shot themselves in all 10 toes and twice right in the middle of their foot, and they couldn't even walk by the end of it. And it was quite possibly the worst game of Chiefs football I've watched in like 5 years. And I've seen some really, really bad Chiefs football over the years. It was tough. And I think also really having Brady on the other side, he's going to capitalize on those mistakes. Like if you extend a drive with a penalty, he's going to put up points, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown. If you lose your composure, he is going to target you and trash talk you. He is a manipulative, just brilliant football mind that's been doing this for so long that it felt different. Like the first Super Bowl for the Chiefs last year, you could tell that something was going to click. This time around, the energy was just completely sucked out of them as a whole.
Sure, I think that's more than fair. Defensively, Alex, we talk about a lot of penalties in this game, a lot of really just killer penalties. The biggest drive that stands out to me, and again, these are some of the more contested ones, but two pass interference penalties against Kansas City allows Tom Brady to take the Bucs down the field. They end up punching it in with a touchdown to Rob Gronkowski. I want to ask you, first of all, did you see anything that really was giving Kansas City issues specifically with the way the Bucs were running their offense? And then I also wanted to ask, do you think there's any even remote part of this? And again, I'm not saying that this is a valid excuse. I'm not saying that this is something that had a big forebearing on the game, but Tampa was playing in front of a home crowd, and you saw that stadium. That stadium was absolutely packed. This is a very weird environment to be playing a Super Bowl in. So really quickly, do you think that had any impact at all? And what were some of the things you saw that led to a lot of these Kansas City miscues on defense?
Are you sure by packed you didn't mean the cutouts?
Well, plenty of cutouts, but it was also in the home stadium for Tampa Bay. But yes, a lot of cutouts, of course.
I don't think the home field advantage was that big of a difference maker. I really don't. I think on the field we saw there are explanations why what happened, and I don't think that really has much to do with anything, especially because it's a Super Bowl and people come from all over the place, and it's not solely Bucs fans, and it was still like only, what, a third of the capacity of what it could be. So I think that's a totally a non-factor. As far as the Kansas City defense, and you mentioned the penalties, but A, they simply couldn't get pressure on Brady. The Buccaneers did a good job of having him get the ball out, and the Buccaneers' offensive line was excellent. And Tristan Wirfs, my goodness, what a draft pick for them last year. I think his Pro Football Focus grade was higher than, I think, anybody, any offensive lineman since they started giving out these grades a few years ago. They came together as a group, and the Chiefs really couldn't get any pressure on Brady. I think it was 4 or 5 pressures throughout the entire game. And like I mentioned earlier, I mean, the Chiefs, they just lost individual matchups. I mean, Rob Gronkowski, you know, got to his spots and was able to you know, do a lot of damage and look like vintage Gronkowski, because the Chiefs aren't good at matching up with tight ends and continue not to be. And so just when they lose to certain matchups, I mean, Brady's going to pick that apart all day long. And that's, I think that's all you saw. I think it's pretty simple.
Sure. I completely agree. And I agree going into asking that question. I don't think the crowd was a factor at all, but it's something that I felt like needed to be at least mentioned, even, you know, not jokingly, but almost facetiously.
Yeah. I mean,
It was a thing that people were mentioning. That's true.
Tyler.
I didn't realize that. I actually, now that I think about it, that's true, but I did not realize that. All right, fair enough.
If they use the cannons, then this might have been a 50-point game.
Stop it. You know what I mean. So the final thing, the most important thing, we've talked about it a bunch of different times, so we'll be kind of brief here, but the biggest thing to take away from this game, it's the pressure statistics. Patrick Mahomes was pressured on 29 of 56 dropbacks. That is the most ever for any quarterback in Super Bowl history. Tom Brady was pressured just 4 times on 30 dropbacks. That is the fewest of his entire Super Bowl career. Kansas City got no pressure. Tampa Bay got all the pressure. Jordan, really quickly, before we move on from this, before we move on from the Super Bowl, any final thoughts on just the pressure that one team was able to get and the other team really just couldn't come up with at all?
That was the difference. And I don't remember what pod I went on and said that the team who can create pressure, the team that can get pressure with 4 is going to dominate that game and win it. That turned out to be Tampa Bay. And I think that I should have kind of taken the Chiefs' offensive line injuries more serious. I thought that they played so solidly. They played well almost against Buffalo that I thought that Tampa, although better with their front 4, wouldn't be quite as big of a deal. But Todd Bowles called a fantastic game, and it was honestly impressive. Like, obviously you want to see the Chiefs at least put up somewhat of a fight, but it was pretty impressive to see what he had those guys doing out there.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Really quickly, Jordan, any final thoughts on the game as a whole before we move forward?
No, man, I think I've relived enough trauma for one little section.
We appreciate you coming on and putting up with this. Alex, really quickly, wanted to turn the mic over to you for a second. Any final thoughts you have on this game before we look into some future stuff here?
Just Todd Super Bowls, just really impressive stuff. I mean, spectacular. Both him and Leftwich and Arians, I mean, the whole staff just exposed every little thing they could, and it worked perfectly. So it's just a killer effort by the coaching staff, a killer effort by the players. I mean, it was a true domination, and I was appalled by it, but like I mentioned earlier, it's all explainable. And, you know, that's really, even though it wasn't a close game, it was a fascinating game to just watch it unfold, because we thought of this Chiefs team as being like unstoppable. And I think Bruce Arians after the game said Todd Bowles was tired of hearing how unbreakable this Chiefs offense is, and he went to work, and my goodness. So it's definitely a performance that, you know, I'll certainly never forget. I mean, just spectacular effort.
Yeah, and again, this is the same Todd Bowles, by the way, that went 24-48 as the head coach of the New York Jets, which is a much different role, but he really has become
been a good coordinator.
Yes, he has become like the premier coordinator here, and he really was on full display here in this one. So, a phenomenal performance overall. I really don't have anything too big here to add. We do have a couple of questions for, you know, where do we go from here? We get to the end of the football season, and there are a couple of questions about this team, and let's start on the Kansas City side. As we have with every other team that got eliminated down the road, Jordan, what are the absolute musts for Kansas City this offseason in terms of drafting, in terms of free agency, and also, you know, again, just in terms of what this team looks like heading into next year?
I think first and foremost, if the Super Bowl didn't highlight that they need to have a combination of getting healthy and then either draft or pick up some offensive line help, that would be first and foremost the highest priority for them. And I think wide receiver is more important than people think, because Sammy Watkins wasn't effective. He's not reliable. He's not consistent. Hardman clearly isn't going to be the guy they drafted him to be. So not only are they looking for a wide receiver 2, they may be looking for a wide receiver 3. And then they need some pass rush help on defense. I think the secondary is just fine. I think the linebacking core is going to be better next season with Willie Gay coming back. And really taking off in year 2. But Chris Jones is on the interior. They have a ton of guys there, but opposite Frank Clark, who can generate some consistent pressure. And they had Taco Charlton this year, who they acquired in free agency. He started off really well and got hurt. I don't know if it's going to be a bargain bin type of situation, because with the cap coming down, they're not going to have much room. They're going to have to create some space. So this is the biggest draft the Chiefs have had in quite some time, because this is the difference between a team that got to the Super Bowl twice and won one, and a team that can get there and keep that dynasty going.
Sure. You mentioned the word dynasty, and that leads me right into what I wanted to ask about next. Alex, I'm going to come to you on this first, but there is one thing that has been, I haven't been able to get it out of my head for the last couple of days. You can tell me if you think I'm being silly. I think that's more than fair. But there is another team that this kind of does feel a little bit like. Granted, the positions that are strong and the positions that are weak are much different, but the team that Kansas City kind of reminds me of is that Seattle Seahawks team from 2012. They lost in the divisional round of their first playoff run. They come back, they win the Super Bowl, and we're all talking about a potential Seattle Seahawks dynasty. They get back to the Super Bowl the next year, they end up losing that, and everyone says, well, who cares? It doesn't matter. Right? They're still going to be one of the premier teams. They're going to keep winning Super Bowls. Not only have they not won a Super Bowl since, they have not been back to a Super Bowl since. Now, obviously, this is not a death sentence for Kansas City. There are plenty of things they can do to get back to where they are. There are plenty of things they can do to become the dynasty that we all know that they can be. But what are the biggest concerns that you have for this Kansas City team? And what in your opinion, do they absolutely have to do here to keep the steam that they have going and not kind of fade away as we've seen teams do in the past?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they'll fade away. I think Mahomes transcends basically everything. And obviously, you know, their line has to get healthier. You know, Jordan mentioned a lot of certain needs that they can, you know, do to polish up certain situations. But I think as long as they have Mahomes and Kelce and Tyreek Hill and at least a semblance of a defense, they're going to be competitive. And the big thing with Seattle was the fact that they sort of had a crisis, because while while Wilson was good as a young quarterback, he wasn't Mahomes. And so when their defense started to get older and their defense started to get too pricey and guys left and guys retired, and they kind of had to completely reverse who they were. That's not going to be the case with the Chiefs. They have an offensive-minded head coach. They have the most talented quarterback I've ever seen, and they have some really valuable weapons that are locked into this team. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge, because now Mahomes is not a young, cheap quarterback anymore. He is the most expensive quarterback now, and deservingly so. And so they're going to have to get really creative with how they do that. And they're going to have to draft really well to continue to sustain success down the road. But I think this team's not going anywhere as far as being a contender year in and year out. They're already the favorites for next year, obviously. And I mean, I wouldn't get too panicky that this could be a Seahawks situation, because I think that was a different situation.
Sure. I definitely agree with you that, you know, obviously Patrick Mahomes transcends anything that any of us have ever seen. My concern for Kansas City is that there might be some sense of, you know, almost complacency that sets in. Jordan, I know you retweeted something today, one of the statements that almost felt like a shoulder shrug out of this whole situation, which, again, I don't think there's anything that Kansas City really could do. But let me just ask you this. You know better than I do, certainly, you know, top to bottom, from the players to the head, the higher ups in the organization. Are there any concerns that you have here with Kansas City whatsoever? Or do you feel, you know, an overwhelming sense of confidence that this team is going to be just fine moving forward?
I think they're going to be fine, but my definition of fine is different than a lot of people's definitions of fine. Like, they held Mahomes to that GOAT standard, which we'll talk about here in a moment. They held the Chiefs to this New England Patriots-level dynasty type thing. Like, those are once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-an-NFL-lifetime type of things. Like, it is unbelievably hard to just make the Super Bowl, let alone win one. Teams that you're not going to win it every year. You're not going to get there every year. So I think that it was a slice of humble pie for the Chiefs and their fans. Like, they're going to be okay. They're going to have the best player in football for the next 15 years, which is just fine. They're going to have Andy Reid probably for at least half of those 15 years, which is going to be okay. Hill and Kelce are there for the foreseeable future. They have Tyrann Mathieu. They have enough leadership to keep everything afloat. They have the probably top five general manager and exec staff. They have Eric Bieniemy for now. I mean, it's the core is there, and they're going to be making the playoffs every year, and it's not like an Alex Smith playoffs where you get there and you're like, oh, well, a lot would have to go right for them to win. Now a lot has to go right in order for them to lose. Like, the Chiefs are going to be favored in a lot of games. It's going to be hard for them to lose. The teams are going to be hosting playoff games. Like, as a football fan, that's all you can ask for. And as someone who likes to watch good football, I think the Chiefs are going to be playing at least good football with an outside chance of winning it all for the next decade.
Sure. I think that's more than fair. It'll be interesting to see how things shake out, but I completely agree. Again, you guys both kind of touched on it. Patrick Mahomes does transcend that. Patrick Mahomes can take a really shaky roster, which obviously the Chiefs do not have a shaky roster, but Mahomes can, you know, he can make up for a lot of things that some teams may be lacking. On the other side of this, taking a look at Tampa Bay for a brief moment, I have this question written down. Alex, I want to ask you about this first. Do you see any reason really that this Tampa team cannot run it back? I understand that there are going to be some questions in free agency. There are some guys with some contracts coming up, looking at guys like Shaq Barrett, Lavonte David, Ndamukong Suh, but a lot of these guys might potentially re-sign, and even if they don't, you mentioned it, this team is absolutely stacked on both sides of the ball. But do you see anything that really that could prevent Tampa from once again being kind of the premier team in the NFC here?
I struggle to. I mean, obviously you mentioned that they have some pretty key free agents, and I did mention that they have a stacked off defensive line, and they should continue to. But, I mean, if they lose, you know, Sue and Barrett and David, I mean, that's going to be a lot, especially on the edge if they lose Barrett and David. I think that has to be a big-time key for them, is just getting their guys back. And a lot of times, you know, so I think there's a phrase out there that's, it's harder to sustain a winner than to win for the first time. And this is going to be a really key offseason for them, because Brady already mentioned that he's coming back. Gronk said he wants to run it back. But they have some several key pieces on this team. Chris Godwin's another one. We saw what Leonard Fournette's value is to them. He's another one that are going to be free agents and could leave. So who knows? They may simply just not be as talented next year. And, you know, if they do, they will have a 44-year-old quarterback at this point next year. So Brady hasn't slowed down yet. He looked really good at the end of this year, minus the second half of the Packers game. But, you know, who knows? I mean, the offensive line could have three injuries next year. If they could have, that was like a Chiefs situation. And I think Jordan mentioned it earlier in the show. If Brady felt the pressure that Mahomes did in this game, he might be dead right now. I mean, so there are certainly a lot of things that went right for them in these playoffs and down the stretch, and it'll be hard to maintain it. But if they can get most of their guys back, there's no reason to believe they can't do this again.
Sure. I tend to agree with you on everything that you just said. It is interesting, Tampa situation, but man, I feel like at this point, I swear every year we learn our lesson not to bet against Brady, and yet every year we don't learn our lesson not to bet against Brady. I feel like for the last 4 years it's been, well, Tom Brady is 40, 41, 42, 43, and now 44 years old, and it doesn't seem to matter. Even when he looks bad, like he'll have two bad weeks and we're all like, is this Brady falling off? And then it never is. One last thing. Speaking of Tom Brady, speaking of the greatest of all time, which I think at this point, even the most delusional of football fans, there's just no way. There's no way to say at this point, in my opinion, that anyone else is the GOAT. However, we have all kind of decided as a football community, I've heard this on every outlet, I've heard this from a lot of different people, at all levels of this, that the one guy who we think has arguably the best chance to unseat Tom Brady would be Patrick Mahomes. Now, obviously, if you just look at the box scores, which none of us are a big fan of, on paper, Tom Brady has two wins against Patrick Mahomes. I think that's less important for the sake of, you know, again, if people are going to be comparing their head-to-head record. I think what's more important is Tom Brady could have potentially prevented Patrick Mahomes from winning two rings. And that's not a two-ring difference, that's a four-ring difference, because both of those years, Brady went on to win the Super Bowl, or this year, beat him in the Super Bowl. So, Jordan, let me ask you this. This is obviously a wild, crazy, unfair hypothetical to even get into, but why not? What, in your opinion, would Patrick Mahomes have to do by the time he retired to be the GOAT, in your opinion?
Man, win probably four or five, I'd say, at least. Finish with passing records. Like, you can watch him play and obviously say he's more talented than Tom Brady. Is he smarter than Tom Brady? No. Is he a better leader than Tom Brady? Probably not. And that's not saying Mahomes isn't a fantastic leader, but Brady's one of the best ever at that, if not the best at quarterback. Being smart, having leadership, just being a technically, fundamentally sound quarterback. He's been doing it for so long. Mahomes will have to have the longevity. Like, people who called Mahomes the best ever after two or three seasons of just watching him play, like, I think that you can have the eye test, and I value the eye test a ton, but he's going to have the hardware too. He's going to have the MVPs, I think. That's not going to be a problem. He's going to have the sustained team success. But at the end of the day, in 20 years, hell, even in 15 years, even in 10 years, people will look at this game and say, Mahomes played a horrible game just looking at his stats, and Brady beat him. So it's one of those things where I think whoever had their outlook on those two before this game, it just kind of amplified that. And it doesn't make it impossible for Mahomes to get back in that driver's seat, but it makes it really, really hard.
Yeah, I think coming into the Super Bowl, a lot of us were expecting to see almost a passing of the torch. I think even if Kansas City found a way to lose, I think we were expecting Mahomes to put up big numbers. But I think a lot of us were fully prepared for a scenario in which the Chiefs blew the Bucs out of the water and Mahomes was like, look, this is my league now. Clearly, that didn't happen. Brady still has it. Mahomes still has a long way to go. Alex, I'm going to ask you something similar. I tend to agree with Jordan here. He's going to have the hardware. I think that if he continues playing at the pace he has, which we've really seen nothing to suggest that he can't, a lot of those passing records might very well be his by the end of his career, depending on how long he plays. But I'll phrase the same question to you that I did to Jordan. What do you think Patrick Mahomes would have to do by the end of his career to be considered the greatest quarterback to ever play the game?
Yeah, I agree that he'll have to sort of own the records and just make it sort of partially a numbers game, that he's the best in the most passing yards, most touchdowns, whatever, most wins. He's going to have to own a lot of those numbers. I think he's probably going to need at least five rings. I mean, Brady has seven, and who knows if Brady wins another one. that would be, he'd start running out of fingers, and it'd be really difficult for Mahomes to catch him. It already is going to be incredibly difficult for Mahomes to catch him. And I think, though, the biggest key for me is Mahomes is going to have the most dominant stretch of all time. And, I mean, obviously, I mean, we're talking about the GOAT conversation, so, I mean, it's not overstating it. I think that if Mahomes has this five-year stretch where he wins the three MVPs, three rings, goes to the Super Bowl four times, blows, goes by 15-1, 14-2 in all of those seasons, it just shows that he has the best five-year run of all time for a quarterback, and then you match that with, okay, and then he finished with this record and this record. He had this comeback in this big game. He had those big moments because it's a numbers game. It's a championships game. It's a big moments game. Obviously, Brady's comeback against the Falcons was sort of like the nail in the coffin of his GOAT talk because it was such a big monumental moment for him and the sport. And he's going to have to kind of out-dominate Brady because although Brady has the longevity case, is there a five-year window in Brady's career that you would consider to be like the most dominant stretch of all time? Because you make the argument it was when during like he beat the Seahawks and then he beat the Falcons and they beat the Rams. But that Rams game wasn't great. He wasn't amazing in that. And they were a D-Ford offside away from not being there. And so I don't know. I feel like if there is a like five-year stretch that Mahomes has, that's just unequivocally the best we've ever seen, that's probably the best chance. And I think that there still is a chance, but it'll be difficult to unseat Brady at this point.
Sure. I tend to agree. It's going to be very tough. But again, I am very excited to watch Patrick Mahomes give it a try. Alex, any closing comments on any of this before we let you go here?
Not really. I'm just amazed at what we saw. And it makes next year interesting. I wonder if, you know, we talk about the passing of the torch this year. What if it's next year? Who knows? So you know, it'll be interesting to see going forward. I'm just also curious how long Tom Brady's going to do this because, my goodness, he's 43.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen every single quarterback that has been in a Sims. Like, Drew Brees is shot. Ben Roethlisberger is shot. Peyton Manning is retired. I mean, nobody Nobody has been able to do this. Alex, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. And we will talk to you sometime in the next few weeks.
Yes, sir.
All right. Jordan, I wanted to turn the microphone over to you, sir. Any closing comments here on this before we let you go?
No, man. Just thanks for having me on. And as always, it was a fun time talking about the NFL season. And although games aren't happening, I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about.
Absolutely. And you, sir, specifically, I will see you in a week and a half for some brews and barbecues with any luck. So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. That'll just about wrap it up for us. Want to say a special thank you once again to Alex Weiner and Jordan Foote for hopping on the pod, not just this week, but all throughout the NFL playoffs. It has been an absolute blast covering the first NFL postseason here on the pod, but football, at least for now, will take a pause, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are your NFL champs. Coming up later this week, a very special NBA report featuring Eric Ruby. We'll catch up on everything happening around the league and take a brief look at all 30 teams, so be sure to stay tuned for that. That'll do it for us. For Jordan Foote, Alex Weiner, one last time, I want to say thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week on another edition of the TBH Sports Podcast.